We had finished chapter 12 and we are going to start chapter 13. But I thought before we start, it's a good idea to get a brief outline of what we have studied in the first 12 chapters. So I think Ashok ji last week had summarized the entire message of the Bhagavad Gita and also had gone into detail in the second chapter. So what I'll try to do is just very briefly go through each chapter. So last week, Ashok ji had done the second chapter, which is the introduction, which is the summary of the entire Bhagavad Gita. So same way Sri Krishna in the second chapter introduces the Bhagavad Gita, and in the 18th chapter he will summarize it. So one of the topics that is the most beautiful, it's around verse 60 or so, it's called the Sthita Prajna Lakshanani, the characteristics of a Sthita Prajna, of a wise person who is established in this knowledge. Because we all want to know, if we are on the spiritual journey, what is my goal? Where do I have to reach? So when you read these characteristics of a wise person, then you say, okay, this is my goal. It's like if you say, okay, I'm going to drive cross country. You know, I want to drive from Los Angeles to New York. I want to go 3,000 miles. So your start point is Los Angeles, and you know that my end point is New York, and what are the places on the way? Maybe Denver, maybe Chicago, you know, Philadelphia and so on. I will see all these places. And finally, I reach my destination. So we know where we are right now. All of us are not at that level of the realized masters like Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya or Jesus or Buddha or Guru Nanak. We are not at that level yet. But through studying of the Bhagavad Gita, through applying this knowledge and practicing knowledge and devotion, we can reach. So here in the Sthita Prajna characteristics, Sri Krishna tells us that this wise person is so established in this knowledge, then the person is so happily established in the knowledge of Brahman, of Om, the consciousness, that he then never gets deviated from that. No matter how many temptations come, how many desires come, not only that, but there may be joys and sorrows, hatred, and, you know, people may dislike him, people may criticize him, he may have physical discomforts, mental discomforts, intellectually he may be insulted or may be praised. He realizes that, yes, that is all happening in the world. It's not that he becomes cold like a rock. When it comes to his own problems, he is unaffected. But when it comes to problems of the world, when people are suffering, his heart bleeds. And he reaches out to help. Why? Because he sees himself in all. Just as he says, I am that consciousness. And so he sees this whole world as a manifestation of that one consciousness that they call Brahman or Father in Heaven or Allah or Jesus. But it is that one consciousness, Krishna, Shiva, that is playing in this whole universe. And so he becomes one with the whole universe. So that is the characteristics of the Sthita Prajna. The third chapter is one of the most practical chapters in the Bhagavad Gita because it talks about Karma Yoga. Because we are all here working. You know, he says, no one here in this world can stay without working. You have to work. Even you say, okay, I don't do a job, but then, you know, you take care of the house, you take care of the children. Even though, okay, you may be a multimillionaire and you don't need to work and the servants do everything, but you still have to breathe, you still have to eat. Even if you don't have to cook, you have to take care of your health, you have to exercise. So he says work everybody has to do. Karma we all have to do. What is the difference between karma and karma yoga? Some people think working 16 hours a day is karma yoga. They'll say, I'm a great karma yogi. I work 16 hours a day. I don't believe in all these book knowledge. But working 16 hours a day is not karma yoga. Even a smuggler or a thief who wants to rob a bank will work 16, 18 hours a day trying to plan how he can rob the bank. He will go study. So just because you work 18 hours or 16 hours does not make you a karma yogi. So what Shri Krishna says, that actions dedicated to me, actions dedicated to the Lord, performed unselfishly for the benefit of the world, and performed without attachment, without likes and dislikes. You know, I like this work, I'll do it. I don't like this work, I won't do it. This person is good, I like him, so I'll help him. And this person doesn't belong to my church, doesn't belong to my community, I don't need to help him. So such a person who can work without likes and dislikes, without attachment, without, it does not mean that the person doesn't take care of his own family or his own health, but even when he is doing that, even when he's working in the office, or when he's seeing patients, or when he's building a bridge, or when he's, you know, doing accounting, whatever his job or her job is, they do it as a service of the Lord. The customers who come before me, the patients who come, the people whom I'm working with, they are all a manifestation of the Lord. So he sees the Lord in all beings, and then every of her work or becomes a service to the Lord. Every activity becomes a prayer. And same thing when she is cooking at home. She says, I'm cooking for the Lord because the guests who are coming to my house are Shri Krishna. My children are little Bal Gopals. So seeing the Lord in every activity and doing work unselfishly, because Shri Krishna says that some amount of community service we all need to do. Because he says the devas, the natural forces give us so much. You know, we say, okay, I worked for the money. I got it home. Why should I share it? I put in hard work, 8 hours a day for a whole year. Yeah, but the sunlight you got, you didn't pay for that. The air you are breathing, you didn't pay for that. The water you are running in your tap that came from the rain, you didn't pay for that. All the plants and everything that are growing, that are taking care of us, and they are taking out the carbon dioxide, these beautiful trees, we don't grow them. So nature gives us so much that it is our duty to give back. No matter, even if you earn a little bit or a more, you can help monetarily, you can help by sharing your time. Maybe if somebody needs help, you go help them, or somebody is in a nursing home, you go visit them. You can share your love, you can share your knowledge. If you have knowledge, you can, if nothing else, you can just provide emotional support. So it is very important. You can volunteer. People volunteer in hospitals, libraries, schools. I find that at least in this country, the volunteer spirit is very, very strong. And a lot of these educational institutions and hospitals and all are actively helped by volunteers. So that's very good. So that is part of Karma Yoga. The other aspect of Karma Yoga is do your own duty. He says that each one of us is born with certain characteristics, certain tendencies, certain strengths. And you have to see what you are suited for and do what is right for you. Like Arjuna was a warrior. He was trained in archery from his childhood. He was trained that when the enemy attacks, you are supposed to defend the country. And then this war came where the enemy were the evil people, and the evil people were taking over the country, and it was the duty of the good people to rise and remove them. It's not only a war for between land, but it was a war between the good and the evil, between who is going to determine the future of India for the next 100 or 200 years, because whoever wins, then their children and grandchildren will be ruling. So, and it was a war for principle, for what is right. And so he was, at that moment, he had been trained from childhood to be a Kshatriya. He now says, I want to go to the forest and meditate. Now there is a time, you know, after maybe he has done his duties, and after he maybe is near retirement, he could start doing that. But at this moment, he cannot run away from his duties. Like each one of us have certain duties. Yeah, you can say, okay, I have duties towards my children, towards my family. But in the evening, when I have extra time, I will do some reading of the Bhagavad Gita. Maybe I'll do some prayer, some puja. Maybe I'll meditate in the morning. So certain amount of time we can spend in our spiritual pursuit. And that has to be done. That is very important, because You cannot say, I'm going to start after age 65. It has to start from now, because then only your progress will be good. Because if you start at age 65, you don't know how much time you have left. And at that time, your mental and physical faculties may not be that powerful. So start from today, start from now itself. So this warrior suddenly wanted to go to the forest and meditate. And what would he meditate on? He had not heard. He didn't have that knowledge. He had not yet listened to the whole Bhagavad Gita. And so he would be sitting in the forest and just thinking about his enemies. And so when you're not mentally prepared, you cannot do that. Like if in our case, you know, if somebody who has that much vairagya like Shankaracharya or Buddha, they could just leave because they had that total desire to know the truth. But you and I who are involved in the family, we have to do our duties. Secondly, it is said that you must perform the duty that you are best suited for. Make that your vocation. Like there are children, you know, who are very good in art or music, and they love art and music, and they want to become a musician, or they want to become an artist, or they want to become an actor. And the parents will say, no, you can't do that. You know, actor khana kahan se khayega tu? You know, from where, how are you going to eat? How are you going to take care of your family? Artists and actors don't make any money. That's good for part-time. You need to become an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant. And that's true. Or sometimes a child herself or himself may think, you know, that my parents are right. I shouldn't go into art. You know, I need to go into accounting, where there's a lot of money. Accountants do. But then when that person is in accounting, that person may make a lot of money. Yes. But then inside, you know, she will be unhappy. Even when she's, you know, doing numbers, she will be singing a song or playing a tune. And half all her, why? Because that was her original desire. So they say that the children should be guided in the field that they are best suited to. And let them, that is where they'll do well. That is where they will flourish. Forcing a person to choose a path that is not conducive to their tendencies, to their vasanas, to their desires, is room for error. And let the children discover their own path. What is, of course, parents' job is to guide them. It's not that you can, suddenly if he gets a, you know, one day because he hears, sees some rock star performing, he'll say, I want to become a rock star. Or tomorrow he'll see a sportsman playing, he'll say, I want to be a basketball player. You know, he may be only 5'6". So you have to guide and encourage the child, but at the same time, see the child's strength. So that is what is covered in the third chapter. As I said, if you wish to know more details, please read this book. The fourth, he talks about the incarnation of God. Krishna says, why did I appear on this earth? So why was the need for God to appear? So he says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuthanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Then he says, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So what he's saying is that whenever dharma, whenever the good people are declining, the good ideas are declining, and the evil and the wrong ideas are spreading in the world, then he says, I appear again and again. So he did not only appear as Krishna or Ram, but we say he appeared in all different forms. He appeared as Jesus to establish the knowledge of Christianity in Bethlehem. He appeared as Buddha to spread the knowledge of Buddhism, as Muhammad to spread the knowledge of Islam, as Shankaracharya to re-establish, you know, the Vedantic religion, as Swami Chinmayananda to revive this ancient knowledge which we had forgotten and which was only confined to a few pandits and Brahmins, but Sri Swami Chinmayananda made this knowledge available to all of us. That's why a person like me with no background, with very limited knowledge, just by reading his commentary, I'm able to talk and share this wisdom. So that is the glory of these great saints and prophets. And that's what Sri Krishna says, whenever I am required, I will appear. And so we don't only see him as Krishna with the playing the flute, but we also see him as Ram, as Sri Ganeshji, as Saraswati, as Mother Durga, and as all the saints and prophets, Mirabai and Gyaneshwar and Ramakrishna Paramhans and Vivekananda and Narsi Mehta, all these great saints and prophets are all a manifestation of that one reality. And then in chapter 4, he talks about the types of karma. What we should do and what we should not do. Nishiddha karma, kamya karma, so desire-prompted activities, forbidden activities, what should be done, what should not be done. And then the nitya and naimitya, the daily activities that one has to do. And then the special activities, like daily activities are, of course, taking a shower, cooking, going to work, eating, doing exercise. And then special activities are like going to somebody's birthday or somebody's anniversary or somebody passed away to visit their family. So what are the activities that should be done, what should not be done, and with what attitude they should be done is covered very beautifully. That every activity should be dedicated to the Lord. And that's when he talks about the Yajna spirit. That whatever you do, offer it to the Lord. There is a very beautiful verse, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavihi Brahmagnau Brahmanahutam. So we chant that all the time before we eat, Brahmaiva Tena Gantavyam Brahma Karma Samadhina. That means that this food is the Lord, the one who cooked, who made this food is the Lord, the one who is eating is the Lord, and the one who is being nourished in the food is the Lord itself. So that person in every activity, whether he's breathing, when he's breathing, he says, oh Lord, thank you for this air. That even we say the air in Bakersfield. To me, the air in Bakersfield is beautiful. You want to see air, you go to New Delhi or go to Mexico City or go to Bangalore. That is called polluted air. This air is beautiful and clean. So please don't complain about it. So, you know, or this, when you turn on the tap, imagine there are 7 billion people on this earth and everybody gets enough water for them to bathe, for them to cook, for them to shower, for them to waste. You know, people just run the tap and just let it. It hurts me so much. I say there is the Lord's beauty is being run out through these taps. So you see the sunlight, you know, every morning you should get up and chant the Gayatri mantra, face the east and say, oh, sun god, thank you for giving us heat and light. If you were not there, this earth would be dead, would be a cold, frozen place. See the beautiful moon and the glory of the moonlight. So every activity can become a service of the Lord, can become a dedication to the Lord. And he says, and people offer everything. Some people offer their wealth in Yajna means a fire. You know, you offer in the fire, you say swaha. So you say, okay, I offer my time, or I offer my wealth, or I offer my service. But everything I offer to the Lord, and every activity I'm doing, I am dedicating to the Lord. So he never forgets. Forgetfulness of the Lord is one of the biggest problems that can happen. So one should never forget. Always remember the Lord. So forgetfulness is a crime. And one should never forget the Lord. And then the end of the 4th chapter, because it's called Karma Jnana Samyasa Sanyasa Yogaha. All karmas have to end in knowledge. All actions end in knowledge. Because ultimately, people say, I'm going to serve the world. I'm going to work hard. And I'm going to build hospitals. And I'm going to give money. And I'm going to, you know, myself build homes for the humanity, habitat for. That is all very good. That is wonderful. But ultimately, I have to know who I am. I have to know who is God. What is my relationship? Because as long as you are working in the world, you are just in the objects, emotions and thoughts, you have to turn your attention inward, and through the right knowledge, through reading good books, through associating with saints, through practicing, through prayers and meditation, you ultimately have to come to that truth. Until you come, your journey is incomplete. Your journey in this life is to realize the truth. The purpose of human birth is to know who I am. And unless you know who you are, your journey is incomplete. So you may do it in this life, and if you don't, then you have to do it in the next life or 10 lifetimes from now. But sometime or the other, you have to sit at the feet of a guru and say, Guru, please teach me. And so you have this book at this moment. You have this Bhagavad Gita. We have Swami Chinmayananda's commentary. We have all these wonderful acharyas who come here every month. We have talks, some talks or the other. So take advantage of the opportunity to learn who you are. Because he says, Nahi jnane na sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate. Sri Krishna says, in this whole world, there is no greater purifier than knowledge. Knowledge is the one, he says, just as the fire burns all the kindled wood, so the knowledge, the fire of knowledge, destroys one's ignorance, destroys one's negativities. Once you know, it's like your child doesn't know anything. He'll just go hit somebody else or he will break the window or something. And then you teach him, look, it's not right. You shouldn't be hitting people. You shouldn't be, you know, breaking windows. You shouldn't take something that doesn't belong to you. Without knowledge, if the child is working, he'll become a barbarian, he'll become a monster. But you have to teach that person what is right and what is he should do, and then only his knowledge will, ignorance will go. So similarly, knowledge is the end of all activities. In chapter 5, it's called Karma Sannyas Yoga, where he says ultimately this person, having acquired the knowledge, when he works in the world, then there is no doership. The person does not even think that I am doing it. He or she thinks the Lord is working through me. All actions end in knowledge. Then even the doership goes away, and that person becomes the instrument for the Lord. He becomes a vehicle for the Lord. He says, Lord, you are the Lord and I am the flute. And through me, you can play your beautiful music. So the doership goes away, and then his actions become pure, because then the person becomes one with the Lord, and the Lord is all pure, all wonderful. So he or she becomes pure, becomes unattached, and sees oneness. The Lord is there in all, and at the same time, he has no concern that much. He takes care of his body, mind, and intellect, but he does not spend all his time. He says, body, one day I have to drop it. So why worry too much about it? I take care of it as take care of the health, but do not get too much affected by what is happening to the body. Pain and sorrows will come, likes and dislikes, and you know. But he is always established in the truth, and that's why such great saints and prophets, look at Tukaram, look at Mirabai, look at Jesus, look at Sant Gyaneshwar, how much society persecuted them, but they were always established in the truth. And the sixth chapter, the Dhyan Yoga, is the very, very important chapter, because it teaches us about meditation. And we say that without meditation, at least in my opinion, it is impossible. I mean, with extreme bhakti, you could do that, with extreme devotion. But to do it with extreme devotion, you have to have so much devotion, you have to have it like Mirabai, where she was 100% attached to Krishna, married to Krishna, surrendered. And for most of us, it is difficult to develop that kind of bhakti, like Ramakrishna Paramhansa. Those bhaktas were rare, you know, Sant Gyaneshwar and Tukaram and all of those, you know, Narsimha Mehta. But for you and I, for in this present world, meditation is a very beautiful method and relatively easier, can be applied in our life. Even half an hour a day, if you do, it will take you closer to the truth. And we do have classes here every Thursday evening at 6:30, where we talk about meditation and we do different texts. And now we are starting a text called Gyan Sar, which is essence of knowledge, which will be very closely related to the topic of meditation. So here Sri Krishna says, in meditation, he says, Udharet Atmanatmanam, Atmanam Sadayet, Atmaivhi Atmano Banduhu, Atmaiva Ripur Atmanaha. So he says, lift yourself by yourself. No one else can lift you. A guru will not come and put his hand on your head and bless you. you have to be prepared, like Ramakrishna, Narendranath, when he went to Ramakrishna, Ramakrishna put his hand on his head and he immediately became Swami Vivekananda. But majority of us are not at that level. So don't expect that some guru will come and carry me or magically my life will be transformed. Nothing is magical. You have to put the effort. And then he talks about the technique of meditation, the benefits of meditation, how a person who meditates becomes so calm, becomes so peaceful, and how his mind is always revels in joy because he has experienced that highest joy, which is beyond all joys. Any joy of the world cannot experience the joy of a meditator who is in that deep silence of meditation. Any amount of jewelry, any amount of wealth, any amount of power, any amount of clothes, any amount of food cannot equal that, even an iota of that joy. So he experiences that. So that is the benefit and becomes established in the truth. And then in the sixth chapter, Sri Krishna also talks about obstacles in meditation. How to calm your mind, how to overcome sleep, how to overcome all these bodily discomforts, all that is covered. And then briefly he talks about rebirth, because Arjuna asks him in the sixth chapter, he says, how about if I die and I don't realize the truth and I have started my spiritual journey, but then is my life wasted if I did not reach you? Sri Krishna says, no, my son, nothing is wasted. Whatever you have done in this life, in your spiritual progress, carries with you, stays with you, and in the next life, you will be born in the house of yogis or in the house of wise people where you can continue your spiritual journey. So this is a reassurance to us that nothing that you put in this spiritual field is ever wasted. I'll take a break here. Give me a 5 minutes to catch my breath. In the meantime, if you have any questions or any comments, anything about what we said.
Different than what most of the people are practicing.
No. What we practice here is what is given through the Upanishads and all. No, we don't do any physical exercises. What we do here is basically, you know, we close the eyes and then you relax your body from head to toe. Then you watch your breath. And then you chant some mantra. Here we use Om, because Om is a generic mantra, because we have people from various communities. And then as we chant, then when the mind becomes quiet, then we go inward to the inner silence, to the Lord's presence. And then you experience that inner joy, you know, in that silence of meditation. We tell them that if the mind is very active, running too much and is not becoming quiet, then become a sakshi, become a witness. To develop a witness attitude that I am not this body, I am not the breath, I am not the mind, but I am that consciousness. So you slowly negate everything. So that is the method that we practice here, that is practiced generally in the Chinmaya Mission. There are various techniques. Some people do all this, you know, sound, and then meditate on sound and meditate on light. And so there are different techniques. But the goal of ultimately should be silence and inner peace and reaching within. And that is what we practice. And at least I find that those who have been coming here, we have some people who have been coming for past many years, who they do have noticed some progress. I'm sure those who have come can testify that their meditation gets better. In fact, I myself have noticed that as a group, when we meditate, the silence is more profound. There is a lot more peace in that group because they are regular. So I think by coming here, you get a group energy, and then I encourage them to meditate every day at home. So that is the technique. Unless you have any other, what other thoughts did you have about it? We say that God has 1,000 names. You know, that's why all it says Vishnu Sahasranama and Lalita Sahasranama, Shiva Sahasranama, they have. And then in Islam, they say Allah has 1 lakh names, 100,000 names. Ek lakh naam Allah ke. So Om is one of those names of God. That is number one. There are you can call him Shiva, you can call him Krishna, Father in heaven.